It's Wednesday, February 15th, 2017, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me are my colleagues Mike McKean and Ernest Perry. On our program this week, Sean Spicer, spicing things up on daytime TV. Nielsen data indicates the press secretary's daily briefings are outdrawing General Hospital and The Bold and the Beautiful. Is the audience's appetite changing, or is he just that captivating? Bob Costas is handing off the Olympic torch, stepping down as the host of NBC's primetime programming after 24 years. We'll talk about why and about the man who will be taking over. And a change in strategy at Playboy has us dipping back into our own archives. There's a lot more, too, that hopefully we'll get to before our time is up. But let's start with the changes at the top. And the rumored changes at the top in the Trump administration. Michael Flynn stepped down from his position as National Security Advisor late Monday evening, and rumors are starting to swirl about some others. Sunday, Newsmax CEO Chris Ruddy went on CNN's Reliable Sources and told host Brian Stelter that the White House is, quote, not showing the amount of order that we need to see. And he went on to say that there has been a lot of weakness coming out of the chief of staff. And then there were the reports in the Washingtonian magazine that Carl Higbee, a Trump surrogate during the campaign, was interviewing for the position of press secretary. There has been some back and forth on that one, and Higbee himself even walked it back a little bit, saying that there had been discussions about the position, but no formal interviews as of yet. Let me ask you, are we starting to see things beginning to crumble?
You know, that's certainly the narrative of the day. It's that White House is crumbling from the inside. It's in chaos. And, you know, what we've seen over the past week or so wouldn't refute that theory, that's for sure. You know, even with things, when you think something's sort of gotten back to normal, after Flynn was asked to retire, so the White House said yesterday, he was asked to retire because he had misled the vice president. President Trump comes out today in a news conference with the Prime Minister of Israel and says Flynn was a great guy and that fake news brought him down. So chaos reigns again.
Well, I mean, chaos has always reigned when you talk about Donald Trump in the campaign, and now you're starting to see it in the first 100 days of his presidency. The Flynn situation just points out to me that what you're seeing is basically the news media has gone out and done its investigation, and it has opened up a lot of avenues by which other news organizations and now even the Democrats and others to go in there and say, wait a minute, you know, you're saying this, but now we have evidence that shows this, and it's starting to come out. You're starting to have, you can call them leaks, you can call them people who are just providing information, whatever, but you're going to see more and more of this as we go along.
Yeah, I mean, clearly there is a power struggle going on in the White House with different camps forming around Reince Priebus, for example, or Steve Bannon and others. But I have to say, there's a whole lot of leaking going on, not just from the current White House. There's a lot of leaking from former White House officials who had access to intelligence information and from the intelligence community itself. So I don't know that I've ever seen a presidency start where the first 3 weeks to a month there's been so much leaking from so many people, creating so much division and concern. But you know, I still think, and we're going to say this over and over again on this show, the president likes it that way. He liked it that way in business. He's testing out alliances. He's going to find out who's loyal to him. He wants to see which arguments are going to work best.
But he's also afraid of liabilities. Yeah. So, and I think that when you start talking about the Spicer issue, when you start talking about someone else who's interviewing for press secretary, it could be going back to, wait a minute, you know, Spicer was my guy. But Spicer's now the and I know we're going to talk about this in a minute, he's the butt of jokes on Saturday Night Live on a weekly basis. That could hinder anything I may have planned down the road. So I may have to find somebody else to move into that position. It's chaos.
Okay, well, in the last week, President Trump has had now three press availabilities, once with the Prime Minister of Japan, with Canada's Justin Trudeau, and earlier today with the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. They all had one thing in common.
We'll take a few questions, unless you don't want to ask any questions, if that's possible. Maybe we'll start. Where is Daniel Halper, New York Post? Daniel? Okay, Blake Berman. Fox. Blake Berman.
Both the New York Post and Fox Business are part of Rupert Murdoch's media empire. And at the Avail with Justin Trudeau, Trump called on a reporter from Sinclair Broadcasting Company and the Daily Caller, two more right-leaning companies. And earlier today, David Brody from CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network, and Katie Pavlich from a website called Town Hall, which describes itself in its own About Us as the leading source for conservative news and commentary.
So they're six for six. So far, the president is in these meetings with foreign leaders. And is it deliberate? Of course, it's deliberate. It's part of a larger strategy because at White House press briefing, Sean Spicer has been doing the same thing, not excluding the traditional media or the larger news organizations, but also calling on some of these conservative sites. And I mean, that is part of the strategy, partly to let the traditional media know that the game has changed, partly to send a message to his own constituents that we're going to call on the news sources that you read, not the ones, you know, that the Democrats and the liberals read. So, I mean, it is part of a bigger plan, and I don't see him stopping that anytime soon.
No, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. This is part of what Trump and his advisors have basically said they were going to do from the beginning. They see the media as the enemy, and the media that they're calling on is in the press conferences and in these opportunities is the media that the public, their public, their supporters listen to, read, and you know, that sort of thing. And I think it's all a part of the larger strategy.
But I have to say, there's criticism of the president for doing that, and then criticism by other members of the media for the reporters who are asking the questions. And that's where I think you might want to draw a line, because even the reporters from the New York Post and from Fox Business News and from the Daily Caller, All these folks are asking regular, reasonably tough journalistic questions about everything from the president losing in the Ninth Circuit Court on his immigration order to Flynn today and relations with settlements in Israel. So these weren't softball questions asked by these right-wing news organization employees. It's just the fact that it's a clear, deliberate strategy not to call on the other reporters who have been around for a while that's making those journalists mad. And I think they maybe ought to loosen up a little bit because they're not helping themselves by talking about it.
No, I agree with you. I think they do need to loosen up. I think part of it is that, are you going to focus on the fact that you weren't called on to ask a question? You should be focusing on what were the president's responses? What are the responses of people who work for him to these questions, to these stories? I mean, to me, that's more important than whether or not you got some airtime and asking a question.
Yeah, I was really kind of concerned. I was watching CNN as they were covering Netanyahu because Amy had kind of tipped me off to this story about him asking only conservative reporters. So I wanted to see if that was true. And afterwards, Jim Acosta and other people from CNN on the air are almost apoplectic about the situation. I mean, Jim Acosta talked about the fix is in, you know, with the White House calling on only these conservatives and saying the president can only be shielded so long from real reporters. He didn't use that phrase, but that's what he meant. So that's not getting you very far. Now, when you turn around and say, hey, wait a minute.
Well, it really plays into their narrative.
It plays right into their narrative. But if you want to call out the differences then from saying, look, this reporter wasn't one of our reporters, asks a question, and President Trump attacks the media again and tells a different story about why Flynn was gone, that's making news. And that's something the journalist should be talking
about. Right, because that is the story. Yeah. If you have the vice president saying one thing about Flynn's departure and the president saying something else, that's more important than who was asking the question.
Right.
Okay, well, Sean Spicer's alter ego made another appearance on Saturday Night Live this week.
First of all, I'd just like to announce that I'm calm now. And I will remain calm as long as you sons of... I'm not going to do that, because that's the old Spicy. And this is the new spicy.
So it was one of the highest rated episodes of Saturday Night Live in the last 5 years. But it's not only on late night that people are turning in to see Spicy Durger Spicer. Nielsen numbers show that Spicer's briefings carried live by the major cable news networks are drawing an average of 4.3 million viewers a day. And that Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN tends to see a 10% growth in viewership when Spicer comes on to discuss the latest Trump news. Now, I don't know if this is a sign of the changing times or what, but he's outdrawing General Hospital and The Bold and the Beautiful, the ABC and CBS soap operas that run at the same time.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if people are watching The Real Spicer to get a sense as to, okay,
is Melissa McCarthy
pulling this thing off? And it's working. Because, I mean, not only is The Real Spicer's numbers going up, but Saturday Night Live's numbers are going up. And I think that people are doing this comparison thing, and it is just, it is hilarious. It is the funniest thing that I've seen on Saturday Night Live in a long time.
And, you know, I guess it's a net positive. If 4 million people on average are watching a daytime press briefing from the White House press secretary, no matter what it is he's saying, that's good for democracy. Part of it may be the reaction to Melissa McCarthy. Part of it might be this sort of bulldog, you know, persona. I think it's a persona because most people say he was a Washington insider, a Republican Party operative, and all of a sudden he's coming off like this attack dog. Most people think maybe it's because the president is watching and grading every performance. But, you know, for the time being, at least, it's good that people are tuning in to find out what's going on at the White House.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're able to get some information. I mean, of course, it's the information that the president wants to have out there, but at least they're getting some information by watching this, and it's not filtered. And I think that's one of the criticisms that people have had about the news media, whether you're talking about liberal, conservative, or middle of the road, is that it's all being filtered. But if you're watching it every day, you're getting it straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, you had a really interesting graphic from the New York Times that you put up on the Links blog, which shows the people who have and have not been called on by Sean Spicer so far. And it's kind of like what we were talking about with the president so far. I mean, a lot of conservative news organizations and NPR and CBS and NBC. But, you know, what I find really interesting, it is the people who are not being called on deliberately, I suppose, The Washington Post and CNN.
Associated Press.
So, well, look what's happening. I don't say as a result, but look what's happening in parallel. They're not getting called on, and their journalists are doing some of the hardest hitting investigative stories that they've done in a little while. So, hey, maybe it's not cause and effect, but I like seeing it.
Yep.
Okay, well, I guess it doesn't bode well for the women who sit at home. Not to generalize women or anything, but sit at home and watch their stories. They're giving up on their stories to go ahead and watch that instead. So I want to shift gears a little bit, and we're going to kind of take John Oliver's lead and not make everything about politics. We're going to talk about some things for the rest of today's program that really don't have anything to do with politics. The first is going to be a bit of a change at CBS. There was the ouster of Josh Elliott, who was anchoring Friday on CBSN, which is the network's cable news outlet only available on the internet. And he signed off indicating on Friday that he was going to be moving into a new role at the network, basically announcing his own promotion on the air. And then Monday was fired and escorted from the building by security. It seemed a little bizarre. The details here are pretty mysterious, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I don't know if he jumped the gun.
Yeah.
I mean, and it could be that. I mean, he jumped the gun and making that announcement before CBS was ready for him to do that. It may have upset his bosses that he did that. And they said, you know what? I think you need to leave. But then again, if you go and look at Elliott's, you know, career, he didn't depart ABC in a very good fashion.
He was on Good Morning America. Right. He was one of the hosts and anchors of that program.
Right. And when he left NBC, that wasn't amicable either. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's sort of a history. I mean, where do you go after this is one question.
But the part that makes it kind of weird for me and making me wonder whether or not it was all about Elliott making a mistake, inside accounts say that his executive producer for his show on the internet channel told him to make the announcement, and it was on the teleprompter, meaning he didn't just go off script and say this stuff. It was scripted and approved by the people behind the scenes. So one has to wonder, is it just a communication issue inside CBS News that they were trying to paper over by firing him? Because he wasn't that big a personality. Apparently, the CBS insiders were saying they were going to promote him, but they weren't going to promote the fact that they had promoted him. So maybe it was just trying to paper over their own problems and making him a scapegoat. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know either. What's interesting to me is that when you start looking at the CBSN, I'm real interested to see whether or not this is going to work for them. Because, you know, they've tried the late night. They've tried to shift things around in terms of their news, and they just have not gotten any kind of traction whatsoever.
Well, I don't know if you've spent any time on that site. The couple of times I've tried to watch it, it's almost been unwatchable, even with a really strong internet connection. If that's on the Wi-Fi here at the university, my home internet, it seems to freeze up on me all the time. The interface itself doesn't work very well.
By the way, this story reminds me of something, because I always thought of Josh Elliott as a sports reporter. I mean, I know he's
moved. And that's what he was hired to do at NBC.
Yeah, but there was another sports journalist who was fired this week in a much more controversial fashion, I think. And that was the tennis reporter, Doug Adler, for ESPN.
Yeah. Yes.
Down at the, I think it was the
Australian Open, yeah.
Calling a match with Venus Williams. And people heard him say that she was using gorilla, like as in the African ape, you know, in reference to a black woman playing tennis. He claimed to be talking to gorilla as in like armed resistance tactics. And so there's some question of what he meant, but he certainly was fired because there was the perception that he was using a racially derogatory image to refer to a black athlete.
Yeah, I mean, and I remember reading that story, and the first thing I thought about was, you had to have known better than to do. Why would you use that reference, especially in today's times? And I think, you know, ESPN did exactly what any other network would have done and said, okay, you've got to go.
Refresh my memory. When that happened with the basketball player, the Asian basketball player, was that ESPN or was that another outlet? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know. Remember what you're talking about.
Jeremy Lin. and the racial slur in the armor.
I think it was TNT.
Okay.
I think it was a TNT basketball.
But the thing about this that, I mean, I'm not sure I know. I mean, when he says he was talking about guerrilla tactics, like in, you know,
yeah, what guerrilla tactics would you be talking
about? And tennis.
But according to him, and I haven't done enough research, he says that that phrase is used in talking about tennis play all the time. So was it in fact a stupid mistake, or was it a misinterpretation? Well, and I don't know, we'll ever know.
Tennis isn't exactly my sport, but I've been around the business long enough to know I've never heard that before.
I don't know. He's had defenders. And so, like, oh, I'm saying it's a really weird and interesting story.
Okay. Well, there was another announcement this week about a sports journalist that came off as a bit of a surprise. This exit, though, was, shall we say, a bit more orchestrated.
So we're talking about memories, and yet you're here to make an announcement.
Yeah, because you asked me to.
I'm not forcing you.
It wasn't like I just showed up and beat the doors down. But I'm going to be like the rest of the country, watching Mike Tirico, who will be an able successor in Korea for the Winter Olympics beginning a year from today.
So you're giving up the Olympic gig?
Yeah, I am.
After one of the great runs in sports history. Can I just say that?
Thank you.
I was really lucky. Literally, no one's ever done it better than you.
Well, you have to mention Jim McKay.
I know.
There's one and 1A, and I think I'm 1A.
So when I first heard this, I went straight to Google. I wanted to know, is Bob Costas sick? Why? Like, why now? It came as a complete shock.
Well, I mean, the way they're framing it is that, you know, he's taking the same tack that Tom Brokaw took when he left the Nightly News. He's going to move into that stature as it relates to sports. He only comes in when there are huge events. He had done some of that during Muhammad Ali's death.
Reporter emeritus. as we might say here in academia.
And he'll do the special shows and that sort of thing. I think, you know, in reading all the stories, I think a lot of it went to He said, I want to leave on my own terms. I want to sort of transition into something else and not into the day-to-day grind, which is when you're the head, when you're the lead guy for Olympic coverage, you are the, you're the one, you're the face, you're it. And he wanted to move that. And NBC basically brought Tirico over to do these kinds of things. I mean, there was a reason they went after him and got him away from ESPN. And this was one of the reasons why they did that.
Yeah, I tend to think that the reason that Bob Costas is giving publicly is the real reason. I mean, I think he wanted to stop and smell the roses, you know, do some other things that would be of more interest to him.
We all know Sochi was kind of hard on him.
He, that
was
when he had problem, the eye issue. Yeah. And Mike Tirico is a fabulous sports journalist. I mean, he's did great coverage of everything from the World Cup to Sunday Night Football and a lot of other things. He was the daytime host of the Rio Games. And so he's clearly a good choice for NBC. I would say, though, the timing of this is really interesting. They made the decision to do this. Costas made the decision months ago before Rio, and they decided to put Tirico in place months before Rio, but they waited till the year before the Winter Olympics to make the announcement.
That's some savvy marketing right there.
And, you know, just to test him out as the lead host for the Winter Olympics. Now, I mean, they make a lot of money. That's a huge financial investment.
Right.
But it's not like the Summer Olympics. So
but
it's they, a good test.
You know, but he has been out there. I mean, as the NFL season was going along, he was taking more of a role there. So you could see that he was sort of moving in that direction. So this doesn't really surprise me.
I'll say too that we ought to just reference how great a sports journalist Bob Costas has been, and not just kind of like the butt kissing kind of promotion we saw from the Today Show and Matt Lauer.
Right.
He's been a fabulous sports journalist ever since he came up as a young man in St. Louis doing ABA games on KMOX, all the way through to all the other things that he's done, and he's done it with relatively little controversy, other than his comment about gun culture that he made at halftime during one of the Sunday Night Football games.
Right.
There was the one about gun culture. There was another time too when he provided commentary about the Washington Redskins
Redskins. But that was pointed.
He
really wanted to make a statement there. And I mean, probably Bob Costas is known more, especially to baseball fans, because he's been a staunch advocate for the traditional style of baseball, not the designated hitter, not any of the instant replay changes and those types of things. So he's been more controversial in that area than in the rest of his broadcast repertoire.
And just before we get off this story, I wonder if you'd agree with this. I mean, taking nothing away from Mike Tirico, he's a fabulous on-air sports journalist, but I wonder if the changes in the way people are consuming the Olympics might also make this timing right, because the sort of godlike host that pulls everything together. You know, a lot of people just watch the individual sports. They do it online, on their phone, whatever. So maybe that's the future of the Olympics, and it doesn't require a megastar to hold it all
together.
With
this Winter Olympics being in South Korea, where we're again looking at a 12 to 13 hour time change, that prime time broadcast becomes slightly less relevant than it is when there's less of a time change.
Right, and I also think that Mike Tirico sort of fits into an audience that is going to watch it in that traditional time slot. And so what you're going to see, I think, is in those individual sports and in the daytime coverage, the thing that people are DVR and are taping, you're going to see a younger, more probably enthusiastic kind of host at that point than you would Mike Tirico being on primetime.
Okay, well, before we go today, I want to take a trip in the Views of the News Wayback Machine. Let's go now to October 14th, 2015. If you haven't heard yet, Playboy is moving away from the nude photos in the centerfold that has defined it, going all the way back to its 1953 debut. Why? Well, it's because its CEO says the internet has kind of made it seem antiquated.
It's not provocative to see nudity, and in fact, it can actually limit our audience.
So maybe Playboy is about the articles then?
It has always been about the articles.
Right. It's always been about the articles.
The quote I love from the company's CEO, Scott Flanders, is, "You're now one click away from every sex act imaginable for free, so it's just passé at this juncture."
So that last voice that you heard there was our colleague Ruben Stern, who was filling in for Mike that week. passe at this juncture. That's great, because on Monday, Playboy's chief creative officer, Cooper Hefner, announced that the nude photos are on their way back. That the way that the magazine had portrayed nudity was dated, but that removing it entirely was a mistake. So the articles aren't enough after all?
No, they aren't enough because this is traditionally what Playboy is about. And when they moved away from it, they moved away from that tradition to the point where you had readers that were going like, whoa, wait a minute. I like the articles, but I also like the photos. Bring back the photos. And I think that they heard them and they brought them back.
You know, I'm kind of glad I wasn't in on that original conversation. And I'm kind of sorry I'm in on this one. But, you know, the nudes are back because the audience wants them back. And maybe there is enough of a demand beyond the internet for softcore porn and the covers of a magazine. I mean, apparently, if I read correctly, maybe there will be fewer full frontal nudity shots than there used to be and more tasteful nudity. But they're still talking about what they've got a hashtag, naked is normal is the hashtag for the publication. They're trying to have it a lot of different ways. They're trying to still appeal to a primarily male audience that wants to see naked women. They're also stripping away the tagline that's been on their magazine forever, which is entertainment for men, because that still sounds pretty darn sexist. So they're getting rid of that, though they're not getting rid of the naked women. And at the same time, Hefner's son,
who is 25,
25 years old,
to his father's 90,
he's also trying to position this as also being about freedom of expression and civil liberties in a Trump era, and how this naked is normal is just standing up for our right to express ourselves.
Yeah, I saw that and I'm like, okay, how's that going to play out? I mean, and to go back to where are the articles that they're talking about? Where's the stories? I mean, one of the things that Playboy has been missing for a long time is the type of literary journalism that Hugh Hefner and others brought to that.
That was one of the things that we talked about a year and a half ago, because I went back and watched the whole segment. And Ernest, you were saying at the time that they were really going to have to step it up even further to increase the Playboy brand without the nudes to be able to compete with the Vanity Fairs and the GQs and some of the
Esquire
other.
And all those
exactly.
Hasn't happened. And that, to me, that is still a problem. You can bring those photos back, and you're going to bring back those who liked those photos, but you're not going to bring back those readers.
Do you bring back the ones who or have they moved on? In a year and a half, have they found another source?
We'll find out. We're going to find out because, you know, as soon as they bring those photos back, we'll see whether those people come back. Maybe they don't.
And they're bringing back the important interview, which used to be always with men.
Yes.
Scarlett Johansson in this episode, in this month's issue, just in case you were wondering who they were going to be interviewing, somebody who probably would have fit in the pages of the old Hefs magazine in a different way 20 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we are pretty much out of time for this week. I'd like to thank you for spending the last half hour with us. You can read more about the topics we talked about today on our links blog. That's under the programs tab at kbia.org. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @viewsonkbia. These are all great ways to watch and listen to our program again, leave us comments, questions, see previews of what we'll be talking about next week, and more. Our thanks to RJI's Travis McMillan for directing today's show and to Kyle Felling for handling the audio. Tim Pilcher composed our original theme music, and Travis Meyer is our associate producer. I'm Amy Simons. Be sure to join us again next week when we're back with you for another edition of Views of the News.